With respect, I dissent today for myself, for Justice Sotomayor, and for Justice Jackson in one of these cases. Today, the court rejects a doctrine of judicial restraint and judicial humility, not just once, but twice. The court does so first by eliminating Chevron deference, the doctrine that when a regulatory statute contains an ambiguity or gap, the agency Congress has charged with administering the statute should usually have primary say over its meaning. The court does so second by abandoning stare decisis, the doctrine that barring special reasons, courts should stick to their prior decisions. Both of those doctrines, in different ways, tell judges that they do not know everything, that they would do well to attend to the views of others. Today's court will have none of that. In overruling a 40-year-old precedent, the majority hands courts power over all modern governance, pushing agencies to the side. Courts, and in particular this court, will now play a commanding role in the nation's policies, about to name only a few: the environment, healthcare, the financial system, and new technologies. Chevron has served for decades as a cornerstone of administrative law, allocating responsibility for statutory construction between courts and agencies. Under Chevron, a court uses all its normal interpretive tools to determine whether Congress has spoken to an issue. If the court finds Congress has done so, that is the end of the matter. Congress is the nation's lawgiver, so the agency's views make no difference. But if the court finds at the end of all its interpretive work that Congress has left a gap or an ambiguity, that Congress has not provided direction, what then? Some actor has to resolve the ambiguity or fill the gap. Should that actor be a court, or should that actor be the agency that Congress put in charge of the statute? That's the issue Congress addressed. It's a who decides issue, the responsible agency or a court. And what Chevron said was that the decider should generally be the agency. The court would still have a role. It would make sure that the agency selected a reasonable construction of the statute from among the alternatives. But beyond that, a court should allow the agency to take the laboring oar. Why? The first cut answer Chevron gives is because that's the way Congress would want it. And Congress gets to decide. Nothing in the majority opinion today calls that into question. The problem is that Congress usually doesn't say which actor it would prefer in the event it's left uncertainty. So Chevron established a presumption, a default rule, based on the best and most realistic understanding of what Congress would want. It would want the agency. But then the next question is, again, why? Here I think it helps to get concrete and ask, what do these interpretive questions look like, really? That will tell us whether Congress would expect the agency responsible for the statute to do the work, or whether Congress would instead want a court. The dissent has quite a number of examples, but I'll just give two here. The first will focus on the agency's expertise and experience in regulating a particular area, and the second focuses on the agency's role in policymaking. Number one. Congress told the Fish and Wildlife Service to list endangered species, including distinct population segments of some species. A question then arose: is the Washington state population of western gray squirrels a distinct population segment because it's geographically separated from other western gray squirrels? Or does that population need to be different in other ways as well? Now, we could look up the word distinct in the dictionary as a court would, but it wouldn't help. Deciding when one squirrel population is distinct from another really requires knowing about species and species populations. What someone is going to have to figure out is how much variation of what kind, geographic, genetic, behavioral, and so forth, will make the statute work in the way Congress intended. And that someone should be the agency, because agencies have expertise in, know things about, a statute subject matter that courts don't. It's the Wildlife Service, not any court, that knows about biological species and their population segments. And agencies also are intimately familiar with their own regulatory programs in a way courts aren't. So, for example, people within the Wildlife Service will know about how the term distinct population segment has been applied to Arctic graylings and desert eagles, but again, not courts. So if to resolve a statutory ambiguity, you need subject matter expertise and regulatory experience, as you very often do, you give the matter to an agency. And Congress knows that. It was Congress that gave responsibility for species listings to the Wildlife Service in the first place, for just that reason. Example number two is Chevron itself, and it concerns a different kind of ambiguity or gap, not one that requires a lot of expertise and experience to sensibly resolve, but one that necessitates simple policymaking of a kind courts are singularly unsuited for. The question in Chevron was about how to define the term stationary source when it was used as a stationary source of emissions. Should the Environmental Protection Agency use a more stringent definition of that term, which would better curb air pollution? Or should it use a less stringent definition, which would better promote economic growth? Once again, Congress simply didn't say. Both understandings were fully consistent with the statutory language and with other signals of statutory meaning. To resolve that issue, and many Chevron questions are of this kind, someone needs to make a policy trade-off between competing goods and values. Should a court make a trade-off like that? Cleaner air versus more economic growth? Or should it be an agency, which Congress has entrusted to administer the statute, which Congress continues to have real influence over, and which also reports to a president who in turn answers to the American people? Chevron said Congress would want the politically connected and accountable agency, not the intentionally detached and unaccountable court, to be making that kind of sheer policy choice. And what we've learned in the last 40 years is that Chevron was right in everything it said about what Congress would want and why. Because Congress has always been able to reject Chevron deference, whether across the board or as to a particular subject matter. But it basically never has. Congress has chosen to leave Chevron as is for decades. That's the best sign there is that Congress wants an expert, experienced, politically accountable agency to resolve ambiguities and fill gaps in the statute that Congress made the agency responsible for. But today, the court replaces agencies with courts. It gives courts control over matters they know nothing about, some of the most technical and scientific kind. It gives courts controls over policy issues, often concerning cost-benefit assessments and trade-offs among conflicting goods. It puts courts at the apex of the administrative process as to every conceivable subject. What actions can be taken to address climate change or other environmental challenges? What will the nation's healthcare system or its financial system look like in the coming decades? What rules are going to constrain the development of artificial intelligence? In every sphere of current or future federal regulation, expect courts, and in particular this court, from now on to play a leading role. Courts, which do not know a lot about these issues, and which have no business making the nation's policy choices. The majority defends this breathtaking change as one suddenly required by the 80-year-old Administrative Procedure Act. But the APA makes no such demand. The relevant statutory language says that courts must decide all relevant questions of law. That language does not specify the standard of review that courts should use in doing so. A court could decide a question of law by starting from scratch, as the majority insists today. We call that de novo review. But a court can also decide a question of law by evaluating whether the agency's reading is reasonable, as Chevron instructs. In other words, a court can use deferential review. The APA is agnostic on that issue. It allows either one. And that's the way almost all administrative law experts of the time understood the language. The majority's view of this 80-year-old statute is a new one. The majority gets no more support from the history of judicial review. The most relevant time period here is right before the APA was enacted. That's because, as this court has many times said, and the majority concedes, the APA was supposed to reflect, not change, existing law. And the law at the time was highly deferential to agency statutory constructions. When faced with an ambiguity or a gap, courts often asked only whether the agency's reading was reasonable, just as Chevron instructs. So if the APA did not change the law, which it did not, or was supposed to have not, then the APA did not prohibit a deference rule. In short, today's decision is not one the APA directs. It is the majority's choice to put courts in charge of business that agencies have done for decades with Congress's full knowledge and consent. And the majority could not do what it's done today without abandoning stare decisis. That doctrine is a core feature of the rule of law because it enables people to order their lives in reliance on judicial decisions. And Chevron is far more than one decision by this point. Congress has passed statute after statute with the expectation that Chevron would govern. Agencies have issued rule after rule on the understanding that statutory ambiguities were theirs to resolve. Courts have upheld those rules under Chevron on thousands of occasions. And private parties have in turn ordered their affairs around all those agency actions and judicial rulings. Reversing Chevron threatens to cause a massive shock to the system. And for what? Stare decisis is also supposed to act as a brake on the urge to convert every new judge's opinion into a new legal rule. It requires that a court have a special justification, usually involving large-scale changes in the law, in order to reverse a precedent. It's not supposed to be enough that new judges have new views about the worth of regulatory agencies or their work. But the court has nothing much else to offer today. Its justification comes down in the end to this. Courts need to have more say over regulation, over the provision of health care, the protection of the environment, the safety of consumer products, the efficacy of the financial system, and so on and so on. Courts, the majority says, need to roll back agency authority and to take for themselves the decisions agencies make. A settled precedent at the crux of modern governance thus yields to a bold assertion of judicial power. Once again, with respect, Justice Sotomayor, Justice Jackson, and I dissent.